You're listening to Central Time. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson. Coming up, a reporter explains why Brown County is the state's biggest political battleground in the coming November elections. First, last week, the U.S. Senate approved a measure that would require women to register for selective service, better known as the draft. While the draft hasn't been used since the Vietnam War, men are still required to register for the selective service once they turn 18. If they don't, young men can't qualify for financial aid for higher education, and there can be other penalties down the line as well. However, up to this point, women have been exempt from this requirement since they were not able to have combat roles in any of the armed services until recently. And we want to hear from you. Should women be required to register for the draft? Why or why not? Give us a call at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. 1234, or leave a comment on the Central Time Facebook page. You can also send us an email at talk@wpr.org. Joining us now to talk about this is Nora Bensahel. She's a distinguished scholar in residence at the School of International Service at American University and has researched the role of the armed services and the draft extensively. Nora, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you very much for having me.
So how long has the discussion about whether to have women sign up for the selective service been going on?
Well, really, it started when the selective service system was established in 1973, when the United States moved from having a conscript military to the all-volunteer force. But it's really come back in the debate since December of last year, when Secretary of Defense Ash Carter announced that all positions in the U.S. military, including combat positions, would be open to women for the first time, that women could serve equally in all units. That raised the question that if women can serve in every position in the Army now, which they couldn't before, should they also be required to register for the draft to serve their nation in time of need?
So basically, because women were not eligible to serve in many of the positions that in a more traditional form of war were really kind of the key places where drafted soldiers would serve, it didn't seem to make sense.
Well, they were prevented from serving by the law, and that law had been challenged in the courts on two different occasions, and the Supreme Court ruled that women could be, but they were sued by women who wanted to be able to register for selective service, believing it was equal opportunity in society equals equal responsibility. And what the Supreme Court ruled was that women could be excluded from the draft, segregated out because of their sex, because women were not allowed to serve in every combat position in the Army, and therefore there was a compelling reason to exclude women from the draft. That's why this debate has come back, because that was the reasoning that the Supreme Court used. That reason has now gone away, and that's why there's been more interest in discussing this and people pressing this issue.
So how did the bill make it to the Senate floor this time?
Well, it came up through a very convoluted way. It came up in the House originally by a representative named Duncan Hunter from California, who did something very unusual. He introduced the bill requiring women to register for the draft, saying that he was going to vote against it. Usually members of Congress don't introduce bills that they explicitly announce they are opposed to, but he wanted to force a debate on this issue and thought that introducing that amendment would do so. He brought it up in the House Armed Services Committee, despite the fact that he did, in fact, vote against it. It actually passed from the committee. Several Republicans broke rank with what Duncan Hunter apparently assumed they would do and voted with Democrats to pass the amendment, and it ended up being passed as part of the House Defense Authorization Bill. The Senate brought it up as well. It's passed in the Senate version. That doesn't mean it's law yet. The two houses still need to work out the differences between their bills in a conference committee, and it's possible it could change, but it seems unlikely now given that both houses of Congress have passed legislation that will require women to register for the draft.
So who was coming out strongly opposing having women register with Selective Service?
A number of conservative Republicans have come out against it. Duncan Hunter has been one of the most explicit, but there were others that joined him as well. The issue came up, as I said, as soon as Secretary Carter made the announcement about women in combat positions in December. It's really important to note, though, that the military supports this. Both the chiefs of staff of both the Army and the commandant of the Marine Corps, the leaders of the two land forces of the United States, both testified in front of Congress in February that they supported having women register for the draft now that that policy has been changed.
And why do you think that the armed services seem to be so overwhelmingly in favor of this measure?
The truth is the all-volunteer force today couldn't exist without women, even given the exclusions that they've had. Women serve in about 15% of military positions, and they're really a vital part of how the military operates today. I think that, again, given that now there are no restrictions on where they can serve, by policy, it's very important to mention that doesn't mean that all women will necessarily serve in combat positions, mm-hmm. just the same way that men who would be drafted would not necessarily serve in combat positions. Anybody who's going to be in an infantry unit, in an armor unit, or something like that has to pass the physical requirements in order to serve in those positions. That would be true for women as well. But now that there's no policy reason to exclude them, I think that it just makes logical sense that if the purpose of the draft is to mobilize a population to support the military in case of national emergency, we're not talking about day-to-day volunteering to serve in the military, that the equal responsibility of citizenship requires women to have that opportunity as well.
You said that many of the opponents of adding women to the Selective Service requirement are from conservative Republicans, and yet they seem to more often be very much in step with the opinions of the armed services and military commanders. But on this, it sounds like they're on very different sides of the issue.
Yes, they are. And the most common element of the opposition to this is some variant of the argument, I just can't imagine my daughter serving in war, or our nation's daughter shouldn't be required to be killed on behalf of the nation. In that sense, I think that what it's playing on is a cultural element of society. There's still part of society that very much resists that, and that's where the opposition is coming from, whereas the military leaders are looking at this as a pure military manpower issue, as they should.
And you mentioned that the two parts of Congress, the House and the Senate, each pass their own bills. They'll need to find the common ground on that. It would then go to President Obama for signature. Where do we know, what do we know about where he stands on this?
I don't think he's come out and entered this debate explicitly, but I would, if it passes both houses of Congress and military leaders explicitly support it, I would be shocked if he, decided to veto it. It's almost inconceivable.
We're talking with Nora Bensahal, distinguished scholar in residence at the School of International Service at American University. And we want to hear from you. Are you reconsidering the idea of selective service? Should we ever consider drafting young Americans to fight in a war, or should we rely on the all-volunteer army? Does adding women to selective service make it more fair? Why or why not? You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Central Time Facebook page. Now, Nora, the armed services in the United States are some of the most advanced in the world, and many people do enlist voluntarily. So there is an argument that some make that the selective service is not necessary at this point in our nation's history, and with how different war is now than the traditional warfare that past generations faced. What do you say to those who would argue maybe we don't need selective service at all?
I think we absolutely do need to keep the selective service because it is the only way to mobilize the population in the unlikely event of a large-scale war. That kind of war that would require more than the military could generate through volunteers is very difficult to conceive of today, but it would be of profound importance for the nation, even in the very unlikely event that it were to happen, that we need to maintain some mechanism to have the population enter the military in case we are in a bigger war in the future. So the question of whether we should continue to have a draft or not, I think, is at its very fundamental core about preparation for even some wildly unimaginable scenarios, but that would be potentially devastating if they happened. That's a separate question, though, from whether the Selective Service system should be maintained in its current format, mm-hmm. whether we have the right mechanisms for utilizing it, for calling people up, whether we would assign people to different positions in ways that are different from today. Those are all very important questions, but those are separate from, you know, the core question of whether the United States needs to maintain a draft in case of national emergency.
In a recent piece, you made a very interesting analysis of the situation of who might need to be drafted and need to be called up quickly in a conflict that the U.S. needed to respond to rapidly. And you talked about the fact that we may need to suddenly call up people who have computer coding skills or financial skills in case of an attack on the financial sector, or even social media skills. How would we be able to find those people, even if everyone was of a certain age registered for Selective Service?
Well, that does get to how the mechanisms of a draft would be implemented. But you know, in the event that we needed to go to a draft, or that we needed to draft in certain select capabilities, we'd be, you know, screening people and bringing them in. It might be, for example, when you register with the Selective Service, you have to indicate expertise in some areas, even at the age of 18. You know, if you're leaning towards being a techie rather than a liberal arts major, something along those lines. The details would certainly have to be considered as to exactly the mechanisms for doing that. But I think that thinking about, you know, needing to draft people into positions that are not just, you know, close combat in the infantry or shooting large cannons and artillery or the armor, you know, this does acknowledge that the nature of war has changed. If we do have a large-scale draft, we would be bringing in people and assigning them, as the draft has always done, to where they are of the most military need. If we needed people with cyber experience, for example, when they came through the door of the drafting office, if they were called up in whatever mechanism we create to have that, you know, someone like that might be assigned to a cyber unit rather than an infantry unit, for example.
So let's go back to the mechanics of the measure that would have young women registering for the Selective Service along with their male counterparts. What actually do they need to do, and who would be affected? Say this goes into place, let's just say September 1st of this year. Who would need to start registering?
Well, young women would need to do exactly the same thing that their male counterparts do today, which is that every male, and in, you know, this world, female, who turns age 18 is required to register with the Selective Service. If they do not do so, they are not eligible for certain forms of federal financial aid. That's usually the biggest incentive for people who might think about not registering. You must certify that you have registered, and that is double-checked in order to receive federal financial aid for school. But you can be fined and penalized if you have not registered for it in other ways as well. And so what women would have to do is the same as what men do, is to simply provide their contact information and register with the Selective Service organization, which is a very, very short process and not very difficult to do. You're also required, if your address changes, I think if you're between the ages of 18 and 25, but I might have that cut off, not quite right, to notify the Selective Service if your address changes.
And if there's a young woman who, when this goes into effect, is, say, 21, would she need to go back and register, or is this just moving forward with women 18 as they turn 18?
So that would depend on the exact language that comes out of, you know, what Congress agrees on. And since there's still room for compromise on that between the two houses, we don't know the exact answer to that question yet.
And just as we wrap up, Nora, you've been following this issue for a very long time. How would you gauge public opinion right now about service in the military in general and adding women to the Selective Service?
Well, I think the broad spectrum of public opinion is very supportive of requiring women to register for the draft. Again, the context of women being allowed to serve in any position in the military now, I think for most people it just makes sense. That if women can serve in any position, there's no reason they should be treated any differently than their male counterparts. What this has done, though, is it has sparked a larger debate on whether we need a draft in the first place, which we were talking about earlier. And as I said, I think that's a separate question. a really important one, but you do see a lot more different public opinion on that. But I think if you ask people, you know, if you take out the question of whether the draft should exist at all, if, you know, you believe it's going to continue to exist, then there's a tremendous amount of public support for having women register. And you're seeing that reflected in the fact that it passed in both houses of Congress.
Well, Nora, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you very much for having me.
Nora Bensahel is a distinguished scholar in residence at the School of International Service at American University. She joined us to talk about a recent proposal approved by the U.S. Senate to require women to register for the draft. And we'll get to your calls in a moment. Stay with us here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson. Before the break, we learned about the proposal in the U.S. Senate that would require women to register for the draft, and we asked for your calls. And first up is Katie in Two Rivers. Hi, Katie.
Hi there.
What do you have to say?
Well, I recently, just in May, I commissioned as an officer in the military, but for a long time, I've always questioned why women were not required to register for Selective Service, especially considering the big push and fight for equal pay, and especially since women are now allowed to be in combat. I kind of saw this coming, but at the same time, I'm also fairly conservative and religious, and I have an understanding and a respect for the traditional roles of women and men, and I can see why it's a hot subject, but especially, I think of other examples of other countries like Israel and how women are, as far as I understand, equally responsible for protecting their country. And yeah.
Right. And there are countries like Israel where it's mandatory service for both genders. Thank you so much for that call, Katie. Let's go now to Dorothy in Greendale. Hi, Dorothy.
Yes. Hi. I'm a progressive and I'm in my 70s. And I am for equal rights for men and women. However, one thing I want to bring up is that I was a leader in the Equal Rights Amendment movement in the 70s. I was a member of the National Organization for Women, and we brought thousands of people to Springfield, Illinois, to try and pass that amendment. And the United States failed by just a couple states, Illinois being one of them. The main opponent of it in Illinois was Phyllis Schlafly, an attorney, and her main argument was if that Equal Rights Amendment gets passed for men and women to be equal, becomes part of the U.S. Constitution, women will be drafted into combat.
Mm-hmm.
And that is why it got defeated in a progressive state like Illinois, which was mainly Democratic in those days. And now I am just kind of upset that we still don't have equal pay. We don't have equal rights guaranteed to us. Alice Paul recommended that way back, that we have that put into the U.S. Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're going to get the draft.
So Dorothy, you're saying that we didn't get the Equal Rights Amendment because of the draft, and now we have the draft without the Equal Rights Amendment.
Right, and we don't have equal pay for equal work either. Since I worked on that issue in the 70s, it's hardly changed.
All right, well, thank you so much for that call, Dorothy. And now let's move to Tim in Eau Claire. Hi, Tim.
A couple quick points. One, I feel like the draft argument is kind of a moot point as long as there are still people around who remember Vietnam, because I feel like unless we were actually attacked in the U.S., that you would be really hard-pressed to find any support for an actual draft. That wouldn't end in horrible protests and things of that nature. And secondly, in terms of equality, if you are going to have a draft in place, you can't pick and choose equality.
All right. Well, thanks for that call, Tim. And on Facebook, Lucia says, women should be able to sign up for the draft. There are arguments against this, but they are unfounded. Women's reflexes are better than men's, and the world's population is enough that we don't need to worry about going extinct. Thanks for that post, Lucia. And John in Beloit is next. Let's go there. Hi, John.
Hello. I think this is a great idea. I think it's completely fair and across the board. I think the greatest thing they're going to have to overcome is they're going to need to establish baseline standards for the positions. Infantry people need to be able to do certain things and things like that. Firefighters need to be able to do certain things. All the positions in the military are not equal. Carrying certain weight loads and things like that. And those things will need to be established. I mean, they're going to have to be. The PFTs will also have to be established in baseline. And just not just so people can pass, but so that they fit the criteria of the job. Now, the PFT should be standard, but the job requirement may be different. So that's my opinion on it, and I think that's one of the greatest obstacles there's going to be, because there'll be a lot of pushback, because people are going to say, well, I can't do that PFT, and the other people are going to be, well, I want to be able to do this job. But
okay,
not.
John, let me ask you for a second, for those of us without a military background, what does PFT mean?
Physical fitness testing.
Physical fitness.
How far, like running 3 miles in, 18 minutes, 20 pull-ups minimum, 88 sit-ups in 2 minutes, and things like that.
All right. Well, John, have you served with women in the military before?
Yes. My wife is a Marine, and I'm a Marine.
And so as far as women being added to the Selective Service, do you and your wife think that's a good idea?
Yes.
All right. Well, thank you so much for that call, John. And then we had Michelle in Madison, who said that she thinks that if women are going to get equal rights in our society, they should be registering right along with men. And that's just the way the direction is going, and it should be right now. Thank you for that comment, Michelle. And we want to hear from you on the Central Time Facebook page. We can continue this conversation. Does it still serve an important purpose to have the Selective Service? As our guest mentioned, the draft might look very different for a new generation. There might be a draft that would target specifically people with computer skills or social media skills or financial skills. Is it important that we be able to pull from a pool of people who are already registered to be able to fill those needs? And if you don't think that women should be registered for the Selective Service, do you think men still should be? Or is that an idea that the all-volunteer military force has really made obsolete? We'd like to hear what you think on this and other topics at the Central Time Facebook page. You can also email your thoughts to talk@WPR.org, and we'll be happy to put that information up on the Facebook page. You can also read a recent article by Nora Ben-Sahel on this topic at the Central Time Facebook page.